Cross's eyes hiding their expression. Clary wriggled out of her coat and held it pressed against her chest, almost like a shield. She looked around with wide eyes. She could sense the non-humanness of the others in the room, the vampires with their pallor and their swift and languid grace, the werewolves fierce and fast. Most were young, dancing close, writhing up and down each other's bodies.
"But won't they mind us being here, Nephilim?"
"They know me," said Sebastian, "and they'll know you're with me." He reached out and tugged the coat out of her grip. "I'll go get that hung up for you."
"Sebastian!"
But he was gone, into the crowd. She looked at Jace beside her. He had his thumbs hooked into his belt and was looking around with casual interest.
"Vampire coat check?" she said.
"Why not?" Jace smiled. "You'll notice he didn't offer to take my coat. Chivalry is dead, I tell you." He tipped his head to the side at her quizzical expression.
"Whatever. There's probably someone he has to talk to here."
"So this isn't just for fun?" "Sebastian never does anything just for fun." Jace took her hands and pulled her toward him.
"But I do."
To Simon's complete lack of surprise, no one was enthusiastic about his plan. There was a loud chorus of disapproval, followed by a clamor of voices trying to talk him out of it, and questions, mostly directed at Magnus, about the safety of the whole enterprise. Simon rested his elbows on his knees and waited it out. Eventually, he felt a soft touch on his arm. He turned, and to his surprise, it was Isabel. She gestured at him to follow her. They wound up in the shadows near one of the pillars as the argument raged behind them. Since Isabel had initially been one of the loudest dissenters, he braced himself for her to yell at him. However, she only looked at him with her mouth tight.
"Okay," he said finally, hating the silence. "I guess you're not pleased with me right now."
"You guess?" "I'd kick your butt, vampire, but I don't want to ruin my expensive new boots."
"Isabel, I'm not your girlfriend."
"Right," Simon said, though he couldn't help a twinge of disappointment.
"I know that.
And I've never begrudged you the time you've spent with Clary. I've even encouraged it. I know how much you care about her, and how much she cares about you. But this is an insane risk you're talking about taking."
"Are you sure?"
Simon looked around, at Magnus's messy apartment, the small group in the corner arguing about his fate.
"This isn't just about Clary."
"Well, it isn't about your mother, is it?" Isabel said. "That she called you a monster?"
"You don't have anything to prove, Simon. That's her problem, not yours."
"It's not like that. Jace saved my life. I owe him." Isabel looked surprised.
"You're not doing this just to pay Jace back, are you?
Because I think by now everyone's pretty even."
"No, not completely," he said.
"Look, we all know the situation. Sebastian can't be running around loose. It isn't safe. The Clave is right about that much. But if he dies, Jace dies. And if Jace dies, Clary..."
"She'll survive," Isabel said, her voice quick and hard.
"She's tough and strong.
She'll hurt. Maybe forever.
I don't want her to hurt like that. I don't want you to hurt like that."
Isabel crossed her arms.
"Of course not. But do you think she won't be hurt, Simon, if something happens to you?"
Simon bit his lip. He actually hadn't thought about it. Not like that.
"What about you?"
"What about me?"
"Will you be hurt if something happens to me?"
She kept looking at him, her back straight, her chin steady, but her eyes were shining.
"Yes."
"But you want me to help Jace?"
"Yes, I want that too."
"You have to let me do this," he said. It's not just for Jace, or for you and Clary, though you're all a big part of it. It's because I believe darkness is coming. I believe Magnus when he says it. I believe Raphael is truly afraid of a war. I believe we're seeing a small piece of Sebastian's plan. But I don't think it's any coincidence he took Jace with him when he went, or that he and Jace are linked. He knows we need Jace to win a war. He knows what Jace is. Isabel didn't deny it. You're just as brave as Jace. Maybe, said Simon. But I'm not Nephilim. I can't do what he can do. And I don't mean as much to as many people. Special destinies and special torments, Isabel whispered. Simon, you mean a lot to me. He reached out and lightly cupped her cheek. You're a warrior, Iz. It's what you do. It's what you are. But if you can't fight Sebastian because hurting him would hurt Jace, you can't fight the war. And if you have to kill Jace to win the war, I think it'll kill part of your soul. And I don't want to see that. Not if I could do something to change it. She swallowed. It's not fair, she said. That it has to be you. This is my choice to do this. Jace doesn't have a choice. If he dies, it's for something he didn't have anything to do with. Not really. Isabel expelled a breath. She uncrossed her arms and took him by the elbow. All right, she said. Let's go. She steered him back toward the group, who broke off their argument and stared when she cleared her throat, as if they hadn't quite realized the two of them had been missing until this moment. That's enough, she said. Simon has made his decision, and it's his decision to make. He's going to summon Raziel, and we're going to help him in any way we can. They danced. Clary tried to lose herself in the pounding beat of the music, the rush of blood in her veins, the way she had once been able to do at Pandemonium with Simon. Of course, Simon had been a fairly terrible dancer, and Jace was an excellent dancer. She supposed it made sense. With all that trained fighting control and careful grace, there wasn't much she couldn't make his body do. When he flung his head back, his hair was dark with sweat, pasted to his temples, and the curve of his throat gleamed in the light of the bone chandelier. She saw the way the other dancers looked at him, appreciation, speculation, predatory hunger. A possessiveness she couldn't name or control rose up inside her. She moved closer, sliding up his body the way she'd seen girls do on the dance floor before, but had never had the nerve to try herself. She'd always been convinced she'd get her hair caught on someone's belt buckle, but things were different now. Her months of training didn't just pay off in a fight, but any time she had to use her body. She felt fluid, in control, in a way she never had before. She pressed her body against Jace's. His eyes had been closed. He opened them just as an explosion of colored light lit up the darkness above them. Metallic drops rained down on them. Droplets were caught in Jace's hair and shimmering on his skin like mercury. He touched his fingers to a drop of silver liquid on his collarbone and showed it to her, his lips curving. Do you remember what I told you that first time at Tacky's? About fairy food? I remember you said you ran down Madison Avenue naked with antlers on your head, said Clary, blinking silver drops off her lashes. I don't think that was ever proved to have actually been me. Only Jace could talk while he danced and not make it look awkward. Well, this stuff, and he flicked at the silvery liquid that mixed with his hair and skin, painting him in metal, is like that. It'll get you... Hi? He watched her with darkened eyes. It can be fun. Another of the drifting flower things burst above their heads. This spatter was silver blue, like water. Jace licked a drop off the side of his hand, studying her. Hi. Clary had never done drugs, didn't even drink. Maybe if you counted the bottle of Kahlua she and Simon had smuggled out of his mom's liquor cabinet and drunk when they'd been 13. They'd been heartily sick afterward. Simon had, in fact, thrown up in a hedge. It hadn't been worth it. But she did remember the sensation of being dizzy and giggly and happy for no reason. When Jace lowered his hand, his mouth was stained with silver. He was still watching her, gold eyes dark under his long lashes. Happy for no reason. She thought of the way they had been together in the time after the mortal war before Lilith had begun to possess him. He had been the Jace in the photograph on his wall then. So happy. They both had been happy. There had been no nagging doubt when she looked at him. None of this feeling of tiny knives under her skin, eroding the closeness between them. She leaned up then and kissed him, slowly and definitively, on the lips. Her mouth exploded with a sweet, sour taste, a mixture of wine and candy. More of the silvery liquid rained down on them as she pulled away from him, licking her mouth deliberately. Jace was breathing hard. He reached for her, but she spun away, laughing. She felt wild and free suddenly, and incredibly light. She knew there was something terribly important she was supposed to be doing, but she couldn't remember what it was or why she had cared. The faces of the dancers around her no longer looked vulpine and faintly frightening, but darkly beautiful. She was in a great echoing cavern, and the shadows around her were painted with colors lovelier and brighter than any sunset. The angel statue that loomed above her seemed benevolent, a thousand times more so than Raziel in his cold white light, and a high singing note sounded from it, pure and clear and perfect. She spun, faster and faster, leaving behind grief, memories, loss, until she spun into a pair of arms that snaked around her from behind and held her tight. She looked down and saw scarred hands locked around her waist. Slim, beautiful fingers. The Voyance rune. Jace. She melted back against him, closing her eyes, letting her head fall into the curve of his shoulder. She could feel his heart beating against her spine. No one else's heart beat like Jace's did, or ever could. Her eyes flew open, and she spun around, her hands out to push him away. "Sebastian," she whispered. Her brother grinned down at her, silver and black like the Morgenstern ring. "Clarissa," he said, "I want to show you something." "No." The word came and went, dissolving like sugar into liquid. She couldn't remember why she was supposed to say no to him. He was her brother. She should love him. He had brought her to this beautiful place. Perhaps he had done bad things. But that was a long time ago, and she could no longer remember what they were. "I can hear angels singing," she said to him. He chuckled. "I see you found out that silvery stuff isn't just glitter." He reached forward and stroked his forefinger across her cheekbone. It was silver when it came away, as if he had caught a painted tear. "Come along, angel girl." He held out his hand. "But Jace," she said. "I lost him in the crowd. He'll find us." Sebastian's hand clamped around hers, surprisingly warm and comforting. She let him draw her toward one of the fountains in the middle of the room and set her down on the wide marble edge. He sat down beside her, her hand still in his. "Look in the water," he said. "Tell me what you see." She leaned over and looked into the smooth, dark surface of the pool. She could see her own face reflected back at her, her eyes wide and wild, her eye makeup smudged like bruises, her hair tangled. And then Sebastian leaned over too, and she saw his face beside her. The silver of his hair reflected in the water made her think of the moon on the river. She reached to touch its brilliance, and the water shivered apart. The reflections distorting, unrecognizable. "What is it?" Sebastian said, and there was a low urgency in his voice. Clary shook her head. He was being very silly. I saw you and me, she said in a chiding tone. What else?
He put his hand under her chin and turned her face toward him. His eyes were black, night black, with only a ring of silver separating the pupil from the iris.
Don't you see it? We're the same, you and me.
The same? She blinked at him. There was something very wrong with what he was saying, though she couldn't say quite what.
No.
You're my sister, he said. We have the same blood.
You have demon blood, she said. Lilith's blood.
For some reason this struck her as funny, and she giggled.
You're all dark, 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 and Jason and I are light.
You have a dark heart in you, Valentine's daughter, he said. You just won't admit it. And if you want Jace, you'd better accept it, because he belongs to me now.
Then who do you belong to?
Sebastian's lips parted. He said nothing. For the first time, Clary thought, he looked as if he had nothing to say. She was surprised. His words hadn't meant much to her, and she'd merely been idly curious. Before she could say anything else, a voice above them said, "What's going on?" It was Jace. He looked from one of them to the other, his face unreadable. More of the shimmering stuff had gotten on him, silver drops clinging to the gold of his hair.
"Clary?" he sounded annoyed.
She pulled away from Sebastian and hopped to her feet.
"Sorry," she said breathlessly. "I got lost in the crowd."
"I noticed," he said. "One second I was dancing with you, and the next you were gone, and a very persistent werewolf was trying to get the buttons on my jeans undone."
Sebastian chuckled. "Girl or boy, werewolf?"
"Not sure. Either way, they could have used a shave." He took Clary's hand, lightly wringing her wrist with his fingers.
"Do you want to go home, or dance some more?"
"Dance some more. Is that all right?"
"Go ahead."
Sebastian leaned back, his hands braced behind him on the fountain's edge, his smile like the edge of a straight razor.
"I don't mind watching."
Something flashed across Clary's vision, the memory of a bloody handprint. It was gone as soon as it had come, and she frowned. The night was too beautiful to think of ugly things. She looked back at her brother only for a moment before she let Jace lead her back through the crowd to its edge, near the shadows, where the press of bodies was lighter. Another ball of colored light burst above their heads as they went, scattering silver, and she tipped her head up, catching the salt-sweet drops on her tongue. In the center of the room, beneath the bone chandelier, Jace stopped, and she swung toward him. Her arms were around him, and she felt the silver liquid trickling down her face like tears. The fabric of his t-shirt was thin, and she could feel the burn of his skin underneath. Her hands slid up under the hem, her nails scratching lightly over his ribs. Silver drops of liquid spangled his eyelashes as he lowered his glance to hers, leaned to whisper in her ear. His hands moved over her shoulders, down her arms. Neither of them were really dancing anymore. The hypnotic music went on around them, in the whirl of other dancers, but Clary barely noticed. A couple moving past laughed and made a derisive comment in Czech. Clary couldn't understand it, but suspected the gist was, "Get a room." Jace made an impatient noise, and then he was moving through the crowd again, drawing her after him and into one of the shadowy alcoves that lined the walls. There were dozens of these circular alcoves, each lined with a stone bench and provided with a velvet curtain that could be pulled closed to provide a modicum of privacy. Jace yanked the curtain shut, and they crashed against each other like the sea against the shore. Their mouths collided and slid together. Jace lifted her up so she was pressed against him, his fingers twisting in the slippery material of her dress. Clary was conscious of heat and softness, hands seeking and finding, yielding in pressure, her hands under Jace's t-shirt, her fingernails clawing at his back, savagely pleased when he gasped. He bit down on her bottom lip and she tasted blood in her mouth, salt and hot.
It was as if they wanted to cut each other apart, she thought, to climb inside each other's bodies and share their heartbeats, even if it killed them both. It was dark in the alcove, so dark that Jace was only an outline of shadows and gold. His body pinned Clary's to the wall. His hand slid down along her body and reached the end of her dress, drawing it up along her legs. "What are you doing?" she whispered. "Jace." He looked at her. The peculiar light in the club turned his eyes an array of fractured colors. His smile was wicked. "You can tell me to stop whenever you want," he said. "But you won't." Sebastian drew aside the dusty velvet curtain that closed off the alcove and smiled. A bench ran around the inside of the small circular room, and a man sat there, leaning his elbows on a stone table. He had long black hair tied back, a scar or a mark in the shape of a leaf on his cheek, and his eyes were as green as grass. He wore a white suit, and a handkerchief with green leaf embroidery peeked from one pocket. "Jonathan Morgenstern?" Meliorn said. Sebastian did not correct him. Fairies took great stock in names and would never call him by anything but the name his father had chosen for him. "I wasn't sure you would be here at the appointed time, Meliorn." "May I remind you that the fair folk do not lie," said the knight. He reached up and twitched the curtain shut behind Sebastian. The pounding music outside was discreetly muffled, though by no means inaudible. "Come in, then, and seat yourself. Wine?" Sebastian settled himself on the bench. "No, nothing." Wine, like the fairy liquor, would only cloud his thoughts, and fairies seemed to have a higher tolerance. "I admit, I was surprised when I received the message that you wished to meet here. You above all should know that the lady has a special interest in you. She knows of all your movements." Meliorn took a sip of wine. "There was a great demonic disturbance here in Prague tonight. The queen was concerned." Sebastian spread his arms out. "As you can see, I am unharmed. A disturbance so great will surely win the attention of the Nephilim. In fact, if I am not mistaken, several of them already disport themselves without." "Without what?" Sebastian asked innocently. Meliorn took another sip of wine and glared. "Oh, right. I always forget the amusing way fairies talk. You mean there are shadow hunters in the crowd outside, looking for me?" "I know that. I noticed them earlier. The queen does not think much of me if she does not think I can handle a few Nephilim on my own." Sebastian drew a dagger from his belt and twirled it, the very little light in the alcove sparking off the blade. "I shall tell her you said so," muttered Meliorn. "I must admit, I have no idea what attraction you hold for her. I have taken your measure and found it lacking, but I have not my lady's taste." "Weighed in the balance and found wanting?" Amused, Sebastian leaned forward. "Let me break it down for you, fairy knight. I'm young, I'm pretty, and I'm willing to burn the whole world to the ground to get what I want." His dagger traced a crack in the stone table. "Like myself, the queen is content to play a long game. But what I desire to know is this. When the twilight of the Nephilim comes, will the court stand with or against me?" Meliorn's face was blank. "The lady says she stands with you." Sebastian's mouth curled at the corner. "That is excellent news." Meliorn snorted. "I always presumed the race of humans would end themselves," he said. "Through 1,000 years I have prophesied that you would be your own deaths. But I did not expect the end to come like this." Sebastian twirled the bright dagger between his fingers. "No one ever does." "Jace," Clary whispered. "Jace, anyone could come in and see us." His hands didn't stop what they were doing. "They won't." He He trailed a path of kisses down her neck, effectively scattering her thoughts. It was hard to hold on to what was real with his hands on her, and her mind and memories in a whirl. And her fingers were so tightly bunched in Jace's shirt, she was sure she was going to rip the material. The stone wall was cold against her back, but Jace was kissing her shoulder, easing the strap of her dress down. She was hot and cold and shivering. The world had fractured into bits, like the bright pieces inside a kaleidoscope. She was going to come apart under his hands. "Jace." She clung to his shirt. It was sticky, viscous. She glanced down at her hands, and for a moment didn't comprehend what she saw there. Silver fluid mixed with red. Blood. She looked up. Hanging upside down from the ceiling above them, like a grisly pinata, was a human body, rope binding its ankles. Blood dripped from its cut throat. Clary screamed. But the scream made no sound. She pushed at Jace, who stumbled back. There was blood in his hair, on his shirt, on her bare skin. She pulled up the straps of her dress and stumbled to the curtain that hid the alcove, yanking it open. The statue of the angel was no longer quite as it had been. The black wings were bat's wings. The lovely, benevolent face twisted into a sneer. Dangling from the ceiling on twisted ropes were the slaughtered bodies of men, women, animals. Slashed open, their blood dripping down like rain. The fountains pulsed blood, and what floated on top of the liquid was not flowers, but open, severed hands. The writhing, clawing dancers on the floor were drenched in blood. As Clary watched, a couple spun by, the man tall and pale, the woman limp in his arms, her throat torn, obviously dead. The man licked his lips and bent down for another bite. But before he did, he glanced at Clary and grinned, and his face was streaked with blood and silver. She felt Jace's hand on her arm, tugging her back, but she fought free of him. She was staring at the glass tanks along the wall that she had thought held brilliant fish. The water was not clear, but blackish and sludgy, and drowned human bodies floated in it, their hair spinning around them like the filaments of luminous jellyfish. She thought of Sebastian floating in his glass coffin. A scream rose in her throat, but she choked it back as silence and darkness overwhelmed her. Chapter 14. As Ashes. Clary came back to consciousness slowly, with the dizzy sensation she recalled from that first morning in the Institute, when she had woken with no idea of where she was. Her whole body ached, and her head felt as if someone had smashed an iron barbell into it. She was lying on her side, her head pillowed on something rough, and there was a weight around her shoulder. Glancing down, she saw a slim hand pressed protectively against her sternum. She recognized the marks, the faint white scars, even the blue mapping of veins across his forearm. The weight inside her chest eased, and she sat up carefully, slipping out from under Jace's arm. They were in his bedroom. She recognized the incredible neatness, the carefully made bed with its hospital corners. It still wasn't disarranged. Jace was asleep, propped up against the headboard, still in the same clothes he'd worn the night before. He even had his shoes on. He had clearly fallen asleep holding her, though she had no recollection of it. He was still splattered with the odd silvery substance from the club. He stirred slightly, as if sensing that she was gone, and wrapped his free arm around himself. He didn't look injured or hurt, she thought, just exhausted. His long, dark, gold eyelashes curled in the hollow of the shadows beneath his eyes. He looked vulnerable asleep, a little boy. He could have been her Jace. But he wasn't. She remembered the nightclub, his hands on her in the dark, the bodies in blood. Her stomach churned, and she put a hand over her mouth, swallowing down nausea. She felt sickened by what she remembered, and underneath the sickness was a